Welcome to Step Zero. I'm your host, Caitlin Henry, life coach and sober curious turned curious for self-healing. Here, we'll dive into sober curiosity, emotional sobriety, personal growth, and spirituality. I didn't hit rock bottom. I chose to stop digging. I'm so grateful you're here. Today, we're going to talk about how rock bottom is when you choose to stop digging. My sober curious journey started 6 months before I actually stopped drinking for good. In episodes 1 and 2, I talked about how I started an Al-Anon, a 12-step program for those affected by someone else's drinking. And then around that same time, I broke my foot and it caused me to take my first break from alcohol in decades. And that's what led me to getting sober curious, where I finally questioned my own alcohol use. But I was really only taking breaks. Today, I want to talk about the last time I drank, my personal rock bottom, and the sobriety date that stuck for good, January 28th of 2019. So over the last 5 years, almost six, I've heard a lot of stories about other people's rock bottoms. I've heard it all from being homeless or even finding a warehouse to live in and they're looking for drugs on top of their alcohol use. Or there's this stay-at-home mom who accidentally blacked out when she got in her car and she drove with or without her kids and ended up with a DUI. And when this happens, they can end up in a courthouse and the judge recommends attending Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't just recommend, I think they're forced to. And there's a court card involved where they have to go in and get it signed and they're being forced to be there. And so people in the program and outside the program, a lot of quitlet I've read, they say that rock bottom is when you choose to stop digging. But more often than not, a lot of these stories I hear, it doesn't feel like it was a personal choice. Even in the movies, in Alcoholics Anonymous, or even in our society, we hear stories about how alcoholics are only blackout drinkers who have maybe burned their lives to the ground with a series of life events detailing how they harmed themselves, or worse, sometimes others. And they knew that it was time to quit, but usually only because everyone else was telling them to. Their loved one in their lives had issues, or again, the judge recommended that they attend AA. And they're sitting there like, well, maybe there's issues with drinking, but I don't need to stop for good. Again, these are stories that I'm hearing. And so the stories that I heard when I first got sober didn't necessarily sound like my story. And I really had to search for people that had a story like I did in order to feel like I belonged. And that's why I ended up doing so much research and taking a break, but then not stopping for good, because I was so confused. Everyone around me seemed to be drinking the way that I was. So why should I have to stop? It was really this internal decision for me. And again, I don't hear this story often, so I wanted to share it today. And so my personal rock bottom, some would call it a high bottom, but I learned that your bottom hits when you decide to stop drinking for you. You're not doing it for anyone else. In my experience, it's almost impossible to quit and stay stopped otherwise. So unless you're doing it for you, it's very difficult to just do it for others. I finally knew I needed to stop for good when one specific moment happened to me, and I'm ready to tell that story today. So in today's episode, we're going to dive into what my drinking looked like prior to sobriety, what my drinking looked like while sober curious, the last time I drank on a girls' trip to New York City, the moment I knew I never wanted alcohol again, and how everyone's rock bottom looks different. So let's dive in. First, what my drinking looked like prior to sobriety. I've shared how I drank normally when I was in high school and college, the occasional blackout, or I was over drinking with friends, but nothing that any of my other friends weren't doing alongside me. Then I thought this party-style drinking would end once I got married and became a mom, But the heavy binge drinking continued on date nights or weekends out with girlfriends. And it was also included in most of my playdates or kids' birthday parties. I would overdo it, or I would ask my husband to drive because I wanted to drink more. And all these events just made it easy to mask how many times I was drinking per week, and really the amount. Sometimes I would go to something, and then I would come home and pop open another bottle of wine. And so once I had multiple kids and I couldn't go out as much, I did start drinking at home more. And so whether I was alone or I was with my husband or maybe some friends, I was drinking up to 6 to 7 nights a week. And I didn't even notice that I was rarely taking a break or even just one night off. And no one else noticed because most people I knew drank the way I did, or they weren't seeing me drink at home on the nights where we weren't out together. So I was just assuming everyone was popping open a bottle of wine at night. Everyone had a hard day with their kids. They deserved a beer. They deserved a glass of wine. But again, these steamrolled into more than one glass at night. And I wasn't getting in trouble for my drinking, but my negative thoughts and anxiety were coming out in impatient outbursts with my husband or my kids, and these hangovers that kept me in bed in the morning, not wanting to get up and get my kids ready for the day. And I would also sometimes need this daily nap. Like, I remember waking up in the morning and only getting out of bed because I knew that I was a stay-at-home mom who, once I got everybody off and ready, I could do this afternoon nap with my infant and I could make it till then. And then even so, I wasn't drinking morning to night. And so I wasn't recognizing that this was a problem. I just thought, I'm a busy mom who needs a nap during the day. I'm tired. I have 3 kids under 4. And so again, I could wait until the kids went to bed to have a drink. And I wasn't, you know, forced in any way by anyone outside of me telling me that I had an issue. I just took this break because I broke my foot. And I did start to question, oh my gosh, what am I drinking every day? How much am I drinking? And just taking a short break got me to get curious. But I want to also talk about what my drinking looked like while being sober curious. So that was my drinking prior to sobriety. And this is my drinking while I was sober curious, just taking breaks here and there. And again, in episodes 1 and 2, I talked about how I broke my foot and I Googled girl that feels like an alcoholic but isn't one. And I learned then that 7 drinks a week made me a binge drinker. 2 to 3 glasses of wine a night times 7 nights a week. Like, I was having way more than 7 drinks in 1 week. And so I ended up taking this 2-week break at first, and then I drank again after 2 weeks. And I wondered why I thought I needed alcohol again after I had had this 2-week break. What was it that I felt I needed? So I did more research and I wanted to find out more answers for myself. Again, no one was forcing me to do this. It was really an internal decision. And I'm speaking to that person today because maybe you haven't been told you have a problem with alcohol, or maybe you've only had a once a month issue where you go out occasionally and it's really just something that happens sometimes, but it's not all the time, so I don't have a problem. For me, it was once a quarter, I would have this random one-off girls' night. I'd leave my husband and kids, you know, at home, or we'd leave them with a sitter, but I would go out in West Hollywood acting as if I didn't have kids, acting as if I didn't have responsibilities, sometimes staying up till the wee hours of the morning. But I would make it home the next day. I would be hungover, but I would take care of my kids. I would get the job done, and I would be like, I'm fine. Even though my partying, I took it too far. And so when I was doing this research to find out more answers for myself, everyone on the internet was calling themselves a gray area drinker or sober curious. And they had shared how they had to allow their body and mind the physical break from alcohol to even start to address the reasons why they were drinking in the first place. And I wasn't doing this. I wasn't really giving myself these extended breaks to see how my body and mind felt without the drink. And again, this is just pure habit forming. like this, you can talk about addiction, you can talk about an alcoholic, but in habits of any kind, this happens to me with Instagram. If I'm constantly opening it and never giving myself a break, I don't know how I feel if I just get off it for a little bit. It's these hits of dopamine that we're seeking for. And whether that comes from social media, alcohol, sex, there are so many things that we can do this for. We need to give our bodies the time to take a break, to see how it feels, to rewire, to make new habits. And I still wasn't ready to commit to forever. And I then decided not to drink for all the holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. I took this 3-month break. I proved to myself I could do it, but I still didn't have my why. I hadn't had some crazy rock bottom story. So even though some of my drinking debauchery could have landed me in jail if I got caught, I wasn't. I didn't have, like, it was all these not yet moments. I hadn't gotten a DUI yet. I didn't need to go to rehab yet. So I drank with friends. I always made it home to take care of my kids. And surely no one was going to recommend rehab because no one even knew I had a problem with alcohol. So even after this 3-month break, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, I felt better overall not consuming a toxic substance, but I still thought there's no way I could be an alcoholic. I always believed that those were the men outside 7-Eleven with a sleeping bag and a brown paper bag, or there were people that needed a drink upon awakening. They were hiding bottles around their house. And mind you, I do want to point out that I was hiding empty wine bottles in my recycle bin all the time. I didn't want anyone to see them. I would dig them in the back of the trash and I would take them out before it got too full. So my drinking looked like some of these other worse rock bottom stories, but I just wasn't really getting caught. I was hiding it really well. And my dirty little secret with alcohol was just that. It was a secret. No one knew but me. And even then, I was the only one that was telling myself I needed to stop. But I still couldn't. And I just was like, why? I was so frustrated. And I want to talk about today, this last time I drank on a girls' trip. It was in New York City. And it actually was on the plane home from New York City back. So I made it through these holidays without a drop of alcohol. It ended up being just under 90 days. And I planned this mom's trip with some women that I had been friends with over the years. And it had been planned before I decided to take a break from drinking. So I had this Sober Curious Instagram account. I was only posting quotes. I had only been taking short breaks. And I still wasn't really telling friends and family. But this sober account was gaining traction. So I knew there was something to being sober curious, but I wasn't sure if I wanted to give it up forever. So with no accountability, no friends in sobriety, or even a 12-step program that had to do with my own alcohol use, I got ready for this trip and I was like, I'll be fine. And I wanted to see what it was like to not drink on vacation. It was yet another event that I thought I could get through, proving to myself, one, I'm not an alcoholic because I can take these breaks and I don't have to drink on these big events. But two, I wanted to see how it would feel because every holiday I got through, I felt good after. I never regretted not drinking the next day. And I had white knuckled it through these holidays. Again, I didn't have any really sober support besides this Instagram account, which wasn't even something that I was willing to show my face on. And so I'm off on my way to this trip. I made it through the airport and plane, two of my favorite places to drink without an alcoholic beverage. Still to this day, when I get on an airplane, I think how nice it sounds to grab a glass of wine or even one of those mini bottles, and I watch everyone do it around me, but then I remember how much I felt like crap after. So I didn't drink in these first areas where I was being offered alcohol. And I just thought, again, I'll be fine. I arrived at the hotel and I was asked if I wanted a glass of champagne at check-in. And I kind of laughed and I politely declined. Ah, I'm strong. I'll be fine, I thought. And so I rolled my suitcase upstairs into the room and I eyed the minibar immediately. It was stocked with all my favorites, white, red wine, hard alcohol, mixers. And again, I'm not going to touch it. I'll be fine. So in this 8-hour window of traveling from LA to New York City and check-in, I had declined the option to drink at least 4 different times. If I could do that, I could get through it, I thought. And so all the girls arrived and they texted to meet across the street at a wine bar for a drink and appetizers. I thought, I'll just get a mocktail. And again, I had not shared with these women that I had even been taking a break from alcohol, let alone been thinking about stopping forever. So they had no clue. I walked into this wine bar and the room was the color of champagne. It was from the sun setting from these floor-to-ceiling windows. And the energy of the city was like on fire. It was a buzz. I felt like everyone in the world was just happy to be at happy hour, and that included alcohol. And I was like, oh no, I got that like pit in my stomach. The waitress set down silky cocktail menus. She glided them across to each of us. And one by one, the girls all ordered wine. At this time, there were no mocktails on the menu. There was no wellness culture around this. It was like, adults drank. That's just what we did. And so when it was my turn to order, in a split second, after all that time saying no, I said, I'll take a glass of champagne. And so the drinks came out and I watched observantly at how the glasses made the ethanol look sexy and enticing. These alcoholic beverages were described on the menu with words like buttery Chardonnay or smooth, delicate-bodied Pinot Noir or rosé blush champagne. Like, just so enticing. But in all reality, it's ethanol. It's what's in gasoline. And so without any rhyme or reason, I picked up that glass and I sipped it. And I immediately felt like I belonged. Like, I didn't feel like I was an outcast for not drinking. I didn't feel like I was going to make anyone else feel uncomfortable. And I just felt like I was a part of. And again, I have no clue what would have happened if instead of grabbing that glass, I just shared how I was feeling with those girls. I don't know if it's just that we weren't that close, that we didn't talk that many times a year, that really our friendship was based on being moms. And I don't know. There was so much of me that wanted to share it. There was so much of me that wanted to pull out my sober Instagram and say, look how many followers I'm getting. Look how many people are feeling the way I'm feeling. But I just wasn't ready to share. And I wasn't ready to quit for good. And so there's so much to that weekend that I'll be adding to my book that's hopefully coming out in March of 2025. But the long story short of that day is that we all got one glass and then we all ordered another. And we ended up getting ready in our rooms. And I think I still had a glass in my hands, or maybe I was just feeling buzzed, but I remember doing my makeup in the mirror. And I was thinking, what's the big deal? Everyone else drinks. Why shouldn't I? And I had this like devil on one shoulder and angel on the next, and they were fighting with each other. But the alcohol was starting to numb that angel voice inside of me. It was starting to numb my intuition. And still to this day, I say that I don't drink alcohol because I don't want my intuition to be numbed. I don't want that piece of me that's trying to communicate with me, that soul piece of me, to be numbed ever. Because then I can't show up where I'm supposed to be. Then I can't say what I'm supposed to say. Then I can't do this podcast and come up with even these creative ideas. This is not an easy task. And I don't want alcohol to numb my life experience. And so we ended up going out to dinner. And over the course of that evening, we all had 2 or 3 more drinks. I kept thinking, this is normal. Be like everyone else. Ignore those gut feelings. And again, these cocktail menus made it look so sexy. And the alcohol did relax me to the point of, oh, I'm just kind of forgetting about all the research I've learned. But there's something to be said for trying to drink after you have some knowledge of this, after you have just the facts about how alcohol physiologically affects you. And so it wasn't as enjoyable as it used to be, but I just tried to brush my feelings aside. And everyone drinking that night was pretty much drinking the exact same amount as me. I wasn't, you know, overdoing it to the point where I blacked out, and neither did anyone else. And we would have called that night fun. It was moms on vacation with no kids. Like, of course we drank alcohol. We had a break from bottles and diapers and the monotony of all of it. While we appreciated our lives and loved being moms, there's nothing like getting a break. And I didn't understand that you could take a break and not have alcohol. And there was this time that we had together with no responsibilities. And it was this adult fun. Like, alcohol goes hand in hand, right? And I had never been on a vacation without alcohol at that point. So this time was just going to be no different. I wasn't going to let myself have the experience of knowing what that even felt like. And that night ended. We all slept in separate rooms. I woke up the next morning by myself with just a slight hangover, but it was nothing like a latte couldn't fix, or maybe even an Advil. So I packed up my bag. I left it at the front desk. And I decided to take a walk in the cold, you know, winter air. And I got breakfast by myself. I just wanted to kind of enjoy the city and the sights and not do it with alcohol in my system. And block by block, I pounded the pavement and I mulled over, like, why did I drink? And I sat down at that breakfast with a coffee in hand, being like, I could have a, you know, mimosa if I want to, but I don't need it. Like, I'll just get a latte. Look at me. I'm not an alcoholic. I can just have coffee for breakfast. And I knew this feeling of I didn't need alcohol to have fun. And I wished I hadn't drank the night before. But then I kept contemplating, well, nothing bad happened. So maybe I should just be a drinker. The only person I really let down was myself. And then in the back of my head, maybe a few hundred Instagram followers. But I kept making this excuse that they knew I was only sober curious. So if I had a slip up, I will just be honest eventually and we'll kind of figure it out together. I knew a lot of women who were messaging me at the time who were saying, I hear you. I'm reading your account. I'm resonating, but I'm still so lost, confused. I keep drinking. I don't know what to do. It was like we were all trying to figure it out together, and I still didn't have the answers. So I was very aware that I had one foot in and one foot out. And the issue was, I wished so badly that I could be all in. I kept asking myself, why do I need alcohol to have fun? I wished that I could have let myself experience that vacation without it. And how would I ever find out if I couldn't do this vacation and even abstain from it once? So because I had already drank that weekend, I got to the airport, I got on the flight, and I had been upgraded to first class. And the stewardess came by and she said, would you like some wine or champagne? And I thought, well, why not? I've already ruined it. And I wasn't thinking about that moment. I wasn't thinking about one day at a time. I was thinking about, I can't do this forever, so I'm just going to drink right now. And at this point on the trip, I had been offered alcohol over a dozen times. I just couldn't imagine saying no for the rest of my life. And so again, I didn't say no in the moment. On the flight, I ended up having 3 glasses of champagne. I remember the girl next to me was working on some Excel sheet, which was probably for work, and she was housing red wine. She had even more than I did. And she was, you know, tapping away at her computer. And I thought, well, she's working and drinking. Like, everyone just does this. And this champagne that I had was just enough booze to brush my feelings under the rug and, like, catch a warm buzz. So I ended up taking a nap instead of getting anything done. And I woke up before landing feeling just bloated and confused. I hadn't really felt that way in a long time. And so the physical effects of alcohol were also starting to hit after multiple days of drinking. And I just was so confused. Like, if I wasn't going to drink and then I thought I could control it, and then I didn't. Here I was, landing back in LA with alcohol still in my system. What happened in New York City didn't stay in New York City. I was the problem. It was me. I took me home from New York and I kept drinking. And so it didn't matter where I was or that I didn't outwardly hit a rock bottom. I had an addiction to alcohol that I then realized I couldn't control on my own. And I took it with me wherever I went. And those drinks on that airplane were my last. Because the moment I knew I never wanted alcohol again was I Ubered home from the airport. My head was still swirling with these questions that I couldn't come up with an answer to. Why do I drink? Will I ever be able to stop? I want to stop for good, but I can't imagine my life without alcohol. When will all this feel like I can be normal? And I walked in the door and I saw my three children at the end of this long hallway we had. And my youngest at the time was just about to turn one in a couple days. And then I had a 2 and a 4-year-old who popped up and they ran down the hall to give me a hug. And within the moment of them running down the hall and getting to me, I waited with open arms and I just saw this unaltered joy on their faces. There was no substance needed. The thought flashed in my mind. Why wasn't I allowing myself to feel that joy without needing a substance? When was the last time I even felt joy like that without alcohol in my system lying to me? Then and there, no DUI, no jail, no going to rehab. I wasn't yet homeless with a brown paper bag. Just in my mind, I had made my decision. I had found my why. It wasn't for my husband or my kids or my family or even my friends. I finally wanted to stop drinking for me. I wanted to unbecome all of the things I had become. I knew removing alcohol would start to peel back these layers that would expose the reasons why I was drinking. I knew that there was shame. I knew I had lack of purpose. I knew I was unhappy in my marriage. But I finally didn't care what it took. I wanted so badly to have that joy that my kids had, that I knew I was born with too, but I had lost somewhere along the way. And underneath it all, I didn't want to offer my kids what had been offered to me, a parent who drank too much and only showed joy while drinking. I really wanted to offer my kids what I wish had been offered to me in my moment of greatest pain, a sober, present parent. And so the last point I want to mention today is how everyone's rock bottom looks different. Maybe you have hit a physical rock bottom that looks like one of the stories I told. Maybe your story sounds a lot like mine. Or maybe your story is somewhere in the middle of both. Maybe you have experience with both, but it's not all the time. All I know is your rock bottom is when you choose to stop digging. It's an extremely personal choice. And from my experience, it happens when you least expect it. And maybe hearing this today is the nudge you need to jump off the cliff of sobriety. And maybe you'll never look back like I did. Or maybe you'll look back and uncover everything I needed to uncover to stay sober. Or maybe you'll want to do more research and take breaks like I did at first. No one can tell you what to do but you. And I think sometimes we wish someone could tell us what to do. Like we could have it stick for good just because someone said so. It's almost like pasta when it's cooked to the perfect temperature. You can throw it on the wall or the ceiling and it sticks when it's done. And so maybe you're just not cooked to that point yet. Maybe your noodle is not going to stick to the wall quite yet. Maybe you're not done. But all I know is if you're willing to question what your why is, it might make it a lot easier. So after 6 months of trying, and taking these breaks and drinking occasionally, my why was wanting to find unaltered joy. It seems so simple now. I still can't believe it's the thing that got me to stop. But staying stopped is a whole nother story, and more will be revealed in my book, available March of 2025, and I'll share more on these podcast episodes. I want to close by saying that I usually tell my stories with I didn't get a DUI yet. I didn't have to go to rehab yet. Because even though those occurrences didn't happen yet, it doesn't mean they never would have. I truly feel like I stopped my drinking before it got to that point. Alcoholism is progressive. If I continued to drink the way I was getting away with it, it might have taken me 2, 5, 10 years. But I truly believe I would have eventually gotten to a physical rock bottom that would have been much harder to recover from, or worse, put my kids or myself in real danger. And that's kind of the reason I'm starting this podcast, is I want to speak to the woman who had a story like me and maybe catch you right before you fall too hard. I'd like to note, for a person with alcohol use disorder or a history of destructive behavior surrounding their drinking, maybe you feel you have to hit rock bottom to seek professional help, but you don't. If you're having trouble now and it's too much for you to handle, please seek professional help. You can check the notes on how to contact me. I'm happy to offer resources. This podcast is available to encourage everyone to think differently about their drinking. But I also suggest a higher level of care for anyone struggling with more than they can handle. If you would like to book a free discovery call to see how my coaching can help you reinvent your life and help you find purpose, please check out caitlinhenry.com for more. In next week's episode, we'll talk about how to stay sober through overwhelm. I'm so grateful for you listening. If this resonated with you, please share it with a friend that you feel needs to hear this. I would love it if you would follow the podcast and leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. Follow me on Instagram, caitlin.henry, and check out my website for more, caitlinhenry.com. All links are in the show notes. My book is launching March of 2025. I hope you heard something that keeps you coming back.